told him in an interview this week that he plans to play beyond 2019.
He just redefines stupidity every day.
The TB12 method is more than just better training. It's better living.
How valuable is that stability to the organization?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, right now I think it's a one-game season here.
Yeah, no.
So we'll just concentrate on the Jets.
J-E-T-E, Jet.
Worry about next year and next year.
That's a really good answer.
Worry about next week.
Thanks, bro.
Worry about last year, some other year.
Dale and Keith, middays on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
All right, last hour, Dale and Keith. I'm Rob Bradford along with Tom E. Curran. Tom, I got the Patriots draft history in front of me because I know how to work the Google machine.
I was just too lazy to move my mouse around.
It's all right.
It's just different when you catalog it, when you look at it. Just take a look. What are you seeing over there?
All right. I'm cataloging it. What I'm seeing in a nutshell is they haven't had bad draft. Like, they've gotten something out of these drafts, but at first glance, it's sort of what we're talking about. The impact guys, the opportunity to get impact guys, which is...
What would you call a Pro Bowl? Can you tell me one Pro Bowl-level player they've drafted since 2013? Pro Bowl-level. Trey Flowers is a Pro Bowl, could sniff around maybe getting in as a, you know, if a couple guys bail out. That's it.
Yeah. I'm just going through.
Shaq,
I mean, James White.
No, Pro Bowl-level.
Yeah, I mean, a specific position.
Shaq Mason and Trey Flowers.
Who is that?
Yes, there you go. You love Trey Flowers.
I do.
That's another thing. So he came on, Trey Flowers came on, well, he was on every week. He's on this show, Dale and Keith.
It's amazing.
And it is amazing. And he talked about a little bit about, they asked about his contract, which I always love, like guys in their contract years. We talked about guys in their contract year. He's a guy in his contract year. And about this, the Patriot system, is that going to impact the money that he's made? Because we were talking just before about some of the money that these guys make off these playoff runs of the Patriots. I think that's undeniable. Givens was another one.
Sure.
And but then you look at a guy like Trey Flowers. Is he losing money because of the system? Because he has what, a couple and a half sacks or something like that? Whereas you go down the list of guys that he's going, they're the free agent class for pass rushers is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
With guys with a lot better numbers than this guy.
Well, but look at Chandler Jones. I mean, when he was here, he was understood to be a uniquely talented pass rusher, but he also had 60 tackles as a defensive end, which is insane. Guys like Robert Quinn and some of the guys who'd rack up, you know, 20 sacks, they'd end up the season with 27 tackles. 20 of them were sacks because they did nothing but sprint upfield 40 times a game.
Mm-hmm.
Chandler Jones, when he was here, he had to play inside and stop the run as well and set the edge and do all that crap the Patriots asked him to. So while you're going to look, and a lot of people look at Trey Flowers and say, well, he's a 6.5 sack guy, what's he going to make? My feeling is he's going to get paid about $80 million. He's going to
Because teams are going to look at what you're talking about, and they're not going to be seduced by the sacks.
No, they're going to say, well, it's the Patriots system. He has to set the edge. He has to play inside. He has to stop the run. Well, but is he like Chandler Jones in that you could put him on the edge and say sprint upfield and have the same impact? I don't know if he's exactly
See, the problem
like him,
with that,
but
though,
he's a beast.
The problem with that, though, Tom, is that they can think that way, and you have to be secure in your judgment skills when you do that. But it is a leap of faith.
Well, for those teams, yes.
For those teams.
It has to be a Baltimore. It has to be a team that has a reputation as a, you know, has a GM who's got some
right.
balls.
Right. You're going to have to trust us on this. When he gets into our system, he's going to do this.
It's going to look different.
And, you know,
it was an easier projection with Chandler Jones at 6'5", you know, built like a small forward, the ability to get upfield and Trey Flowers is a little more squat, 6'2", 6'3".
It's also, I think that there's more front offices like that. There's more front offices, and I brought up the Larry Brown example of being, you know, seduced by the playoff performance, mm-hmm. the Super Bowl MVP, and it was very easy because part of this ownership have to sign off on it. The Red Sox were an example of this. Pablo Sandoval, look at how well he did in the World Series.
Right.
He does well on the big stage, even though he is the 97th best OPS over the last 3 years. You're going to have to trust us on this, right? So I think there is a forward thinking, and to stay with baseball, the idea of saves, like you said, was sacks. This was... You get this many sacks, you are going to be paid this right. much money. This is why Craig Kimbrell, I think, was a little hesitant to maybe pitch outside the ninth inning. Because, number one, contract. Number two, Hall of Fame. It is harder to sell both those things, even in this enlightened way of thinking, when you don't have that as a crutch. Right? But I do think... I'm not disagreeing with you. I think a team could look at Trey Flowers, but they still have to sell it to the fan base, which is a lot of times the hardest thing to do.
And that's what the Patriots have a difficult time with in terms of their establishing value for guys, because it's hard for them to look at a player that they get as a fourth round pick and have him play so well in their system that he elevates to one of the better players in the league, and now he wants to be paid commensurate with those guys in the league. And the Patriots go, well, you know what? You're a fourth-round pick initially. I have a hard time paying you as one of the three best players in the league where we got you. And I think that's just natural for them. You know, someone said it to me once, you know, Bill Belichick loved Wes Welker at $3 million a year. He hated him franchised at $9 million a year. So once you're paid a certain way, Bill Belichick, the economics major from Wesleyan, is going to regard you. I mean, how does he talk about the players like Brandon Bolden and the guys who are further down the roster who play well in unexpected ways? He lavishes so much praise on them, whereas the star players, I think there's a he better play that way.
Right.
That's what our expectation is.
Give me an example of a free agent, like the Patriots, what we're talking about. The Patriots, this guy... We're going to sign this guy because he's going to fit our system and thrive in our system. Nothing's jumping to mind right now. Do you have...
That they've brought guys
in? Yeah, they brought guys in.
I guess, no, it's more trades. It's more Kyle Van Noy, for instance.
Well, that's a good one. That's a good one, yeah.
It's not Logan Ryan. It's Jason McCourty, who's had an excellent year. It's Stephon Gilmore. These guys, but they're at a kind of a bumper crop right now of guys that they've brought in from elsewhere. You know, Trent Brown, again, that's... These are really good personnel moves. While we can sit here and go down those guys in the draft, we can also look at Trent Brown as being, okay, you replaced a $60 million, whatever it was, that Solder is getting with a seventh round.
Mm-hmm.
Trent Brown, that's a good move. That's a solid move. You found Marcus Cannon in the fifth round of the draft. You got David Andrews undrafted. You got Shaq Mason in the fourth round. Joe Tooney in the third round, whatever he was. You've gotten great value there. So while you don't get great value maybe from your first and second rounders, or you swing and miss because you're down at the bottom of the, or swing and just make, you know, glancing contact, all of it has to be weighed equally.
Well, yeah, you're right. And you brought up some great examples of how they have, and I think this is what one of the chief, along with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, chief reasons they've been able to sustain the success, because they have been great at identifying those sort of guys. And not necessarily guys like Adalius Thomas, who you know, they're going to pay a lot of money for and he's going to dominate. No, the Kyle Van Noys, the Trent Browns, that's what keeps the train moving. Now, but one of the other things that drive me nuts about when it comes to the Patriots conversation is we drafted him here, even though he was projected, you know, he drafted, mm-hmm. And I'll give sure. the prime example, Jordan Richards, remember?
Absolutely.
Jordan
Devin
Richards.
McCourty fits that.
We drafted, well, but it's Devin McCourty worked out. My point is that Jordan Richards is a second round pick.
Yep.
And when he was drafted, he was projected like six rounds, something like
if
that.
If that.
Yeah, okay, sixth or seventh round. And people say, well, this is how they value it. They value him a lot differently. You're just going to have to trust him because it's going to fit the Patriots system. He was a captain at Stanford, so forth and so on. Well, like, my problem with that is that that's all well and good, but this is business. You could probably, if he's projected in the sixth round, you can get him in the fourth round. You don't have to jump up to the second round.
Well, that, to me, is a good point. And then we end up getting into the conversation of, well, how does their board look relative to everyone else's? And then, okay, but the point remains, one of the only guys that I saw them make a value move on was Ryan Mallett when they didn't need Ryan Mallett. You know, he was a third-round pick, but he was so glaringly overlooked at that point that they said, let's just take this kid. And, you know, he was there for a reason. But, you know, with Jordan Richards, you're right. In their hearts, they were trying to do the right thing, They were trying to get a rocked-up safety who could play in the box and be the bridge between Patrick Chung and whoever, because you need that. That's what the NFL is trending toward. But he was a robot. He ran like an alligator. You just run straight forward. If you took a left, he had to run all the way around to turn around. He's just not a good player, and they saw that in Atlanta as well. That's a bad, either a bad scouting job or a bad drafting
job. And everyone has. The overall conversation when that happens drives me sort of nuts, because if you're talking about around here or there, but you could have got him
later.
Like,
who did you beat to the punch?
Right. You didn't beat someone four rounds to the punch for Jordan Richards. And Sony Michel is another guy we're going to have to figure out exactly what he is. I think right now he's going to be a very good running back in this league. But he was a surprise pick, right?
He's a surprise pick, but I'll make this case.
Yes.
Because of all the conversation around him, they might have made a mistake in getting Brandon Cooks in hindsight. In hindsight. Because they didn't have anybody coming up. But they absolutely positively did the right thing in getting Sony Michel. Because without him, what would your running game look like?
Think about when he got hurt against
Jeremy
Tennessee.
Hill got hurt. Jeremy Hill was going to be a good player for them. He gets hurt, blows his ACL. Rex Burkhead is fine for an 8-8 team. James White is not a between-the-tackles running back. Cordero Patterson has, you know, gotten part-time work there because they didn't have anyone else. Thank God, if you're a Patriots fan, they drafted Sony Michel.
Oh, well, when he got hurt in Tennessee, it wasn't Brady getting hurt. It wasn't Gronk getting hurt.
Right.
But it wasn't far off because he was starting to get going a little bit. And you're like, you're going to need him. But I think, was Burkhead out at that time?
Burkhead was out.
Yeah, Burkhead was out at that time. And like, okay, good luck with that.
Yep.
So anyway, we're talking about team building. It's like, you know what's good for business. People love team building talk.
Oh, they do. People jump right in.
Oh, people, they love it. 617-779-7937. See you all lined up. Join the conversation if you like. Tommy Kern, Rob Bradford with you till 2 o'clock. Tomasi and Mark James at the top of the hour. Be back right after this.
Back to Dale and Keith on WEEI.
Robust will the market be for Josh McDaniels as a head coaching candidate?
That's a really, really good question.
Thank you very much.
I've been trying to get a feel for that. And, you know, the one thing, I mean, Cleveland is shut down really, really tight right now. So I can't tell you whether John Dorsey is going to be interested in bringing Josh McDaniels home or not. The interesting one to me is Green Bay. I know the Packers have asked around about him, and I think they're going to look into him. How seriously they'll look into him, I don't know. I think they're doing some perfunctory interviews this week. I do think that of those two, I think Green Bay would probably be the more interesting one.
All right, that's Peter King on with us. This is the Dale and Keefe program. We're taking you all the way to 2 o'clock. I'm Rob Bradford along with Tommy Kern.
Hi.
Tommy Kern has a, when's your podcast dropping?
It's a podcast. Usually it drops on Tuesday. This week, that was the Yule. So we're going to actually do the pod when I get to the office up in Burlington around 2:30. Quicksilence, a podcast, will drop probably around 6 o'clock tonight. I'm going to talk to Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star, Nick Underhill from the Baton Rouge Advocate. I don't know if it's a Baton Rouge Advocate or not, but I know it's down there.
Times Picayune.
They're going to make their case for Patrick Mahomes as the MVP or Drew Brees as the MVP. Then I'm going to have Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus.
Former UMass Lowell pitcher, yes.
He will give me the numbers on who should be the MVP because I have one of those votes. There's only 50 of them. There's only 50 votes for the Associated Press, All Pros, and the
Do you think you're going to be convinced? Do you think after this that they are going to convince you?
I think I've been moved off my spot a little bit with Patrick Mahomes, but I think sometimes you also dig in and start to justify. And even though you can look at efficiency numbers with Brees, he's going to set a record for completion percentage. He's got 6 game-winning drives, I believe, and people hold it against Mahomes that he hasn't won against the best competition while Brees has. I look at it and I say, man, you're telling me scoring 51 against the Rams, he didn't do enough? You're telling me scoring 42 against the Patriots, he didn't do enough? So you're going to hold that against them, whereas Drew Brees scored 10 points against the Cowboys on a Thursday night. I watched that game, but we're going to act like, no. What Mahomes has done to me not me personally, but what Ed Mahomes has done.
I'll tell you what his dad did to me. Killed me in some fancy baseball leagues.
Did he really?
Oh, back in the day, Pat Mahomes, Minnesota Twins.
Fantasy baseball genius, was he?
He was a pitcher. He was.
I know he was.
It was a highly touted, he was the guy.
Oh, so he personally, I thought you were in the same league with him.
No.
Because you get cozy with these players.
Yes, of course. Well, I'm in with the Players Fantasy Baseball League.
I didn't know. It seems much more collegial over there.
Anyway, it is not.
So Mahomes is, to me, the MVP because of not only what he's done for that team, and you could tell me, oh, Alex Smith had a good season too. Sure he did. But I think he has imbued that franchise with a level of confidence that it hasn't had, that it can go to a different level than it's been at.
Do you think ultimately it's as we sit here right now, is Chiefs versus Saints in the Super Bowl?
No, I don't. I think the season has been so utterly unpredictable that I would be as surprised if it's Chiefs versus Saints as I would be if it's Cowboys versus Ravens. Absolutely.
Do you have a prediction? Or do you want to save
it? I haven't
prediction?
Ruminated on it enough at this point because I think it's so asinine not to. I'm just so pissed off.
Are you saying
off.
My question's asinine?
No, I'm just so pissed off at the unpredictability of it. So even sitting here, and so, what was it, 8 days ago, San Diego's the team to beat?
Well, how about the Rams?
Indianapolis was the team to beat, and they got shut out in Jacksonville. It's week to week more than it's ever been, so why bother? And that's why, you know, all your hand-wringing and concern and nervousness over Buffalo Bills' performance by Tom Brady is misplaced worry.
I would not say hand-wringing. I would say it was
the 10 o'clock hour.
Peculiar. But what is not peculiar is the fact that Josh McDaniels is in the mix. Is going to be in the mix for a head coaching job. As we just said, we talked to Peter King early in this show. First off, my question is you think that he's had a really good year, McDaniels?
Yes, and my Twitter feed is absolutely consumed with get him out of here. I hate Josh McDaniels. Why is he such a moron throughout the game every Sunday? And that's why when you run a jet sweep on 4th-and-1 and it doesn't work, or whatever it is that he does that pisses somebody off on that particular play, I get it. But if you also look what he's tried to make an offense work out of, they went into the season with Philip Dorsett and Chris Hogan as top two wide receivers. Mm-hmm. Cordarrelle Patterson, they were pretty quickly able to identify, can't really be counted upon as a downfield receiver. Sony Michel was hurt in the early part of the season. They made something with James White to make it, you know, him even that much more productive. They got Sony Michel enmeshed in the offense, made great strides. He'd have a 1,000-yard season easily had he been available all of the way through. They brought Josh Gordon in after the fourth game of the season. They got more production out of him in 5 years than anybody has gotten. They've got him to stay on the field. Then they were able also to find a role for Patterson to make him usable. They've been able to weather the storm with Gronkowski not playing well. They've turned their offense into, in a very difficult year, without Amendola, without Cooks, without Deion Lewis, into an offense that's made a lot of progress. I think he has been outstanding, and I know that I'm in the minority by a lot with that. Do you hate Josh McDaniels?
No, I don't. But you know, you have a lot of good points about how he's had to adjust. I don't think people appreciate that. We talked about Jeremy Hill. Jeremy Hill was going to be a guy, right? So he's gone. You have to adjust to that. And then
Burkhead's gone.
From the players that he's given, they whiffed. I mean, they whiffed on replacing Brandon Cooks. And you can say, well, Philip Dorsett had a couple of good games at the beginning of the year. He wasn't Brandon Cooks, and also, if they thought that Philip Dorsett was going to be the guy, they wouldn't have brought in this cavalcade of guys.
Right.
Like where, you know, Eric Decker and Jordan Matthews, right? These guys are, it's a crazy amount of receivers they brought in who they whiffed on. I don't think Josh McDaniels whiffed on him. I think the decision makers whiffed on him. The team builders whiffed on them. So I agree. I think that there's two different conversations. Yes, I think he's having a good year, but will he be able, if he does go take a head coaching job, will he be closer to Matt Patricia and the rest of these guys, or like he was in Denver, or will he have evolved and be something else?
I think it's really hard when you're in this cocoon of doing things in a particular way and seeing for however long, as McDaniels has, that it works, to go someplace else and actually countenance a different way of doing things. I think that Bill O'Brien was probably in the Patriot system just long enough to get a sampling of how to do things, but was also his own guy for long enough in other places where he was able to build his own understanding of there are different ways to have a different bedside manner. So where a lot of these guys come up short is on bedside manner. And
including Bill O'Brien, by the way, if you go back to the beginning of this year, remember the conversations when they started 0-3?
Mm-hmm.
Bill O'Brien, hot seat. Bill O'Brien,
right.
Too stringent. Bill O'Brien isn't getting through to his players, so forth and so on.
And he's gone through that every year. Remember they got their doors blown off in London last year, and you thought he might get fired on the way home on the plane, and they resurrected themselves. But I hope that McDaniels does well elsewhere because, you know, over the course of time, you know, you come to believe that somebody has potential to do something and you'd rather be right than wrong. And I believe that he can perform well someplace else, but he better get in the right situation with a young quarterback as opposed to an older quarterback. But to me, it's interesting because he will be a hard sell. You talked about how if you're a GM bringing in a Trey Flowers and paying him $80 million, that's a hard sell. How hard is the sell going to be, Rob, for the general manager and owner bringing in Josh McDaniels?
But it wasn't, you know, and we have an example of this. So, Indy, do you think that you are getting a lot of pushback in that?
No, but I think if you're the Cleveland Browns and you bring him in, a lot of people are going to say, well, you quit on Indy before you even got in the door. Why are we hiring this guy?
Well, yeah, that's when that Indy thing happened. I was on the air that night and we said, there you go. That's the end of Josh McDaniels. That's it. And do you think he has any regrets about not taking that job? The Indy job? Because as it turns out, it's a pretty good job.
I think all things being equal, you probably look at the way Andrew Luck has performed this year, and if there was anything in Josh's mindset that said, I'm not sure about Andrew Luck, then you might want to have that back. But I think that would be the only thing. He left because of unease. Excuse me, he stayed here because of unease about going to Indianapolis that was greater than the Patriots enticing him to stay.
Okay. And the other thing with Josh McDaniels is we talk about him having a good year. Well, his ultimate test, let's be honest, his ultimate test, Tom Brady's one thing. His ultimate test may be to get something out of Rob Gronkowski, to find a way to have Rob Gronkowski revert back to. We've seen some of it, but you know, I'll go back to the Buffalo game, and I hate doing this, Tom. I hate doing the body language and trying to read, but I watched that. I watched Gronk, and I'm like, either he can't run hard or he's not running hard. Am I missing something?
This season is chock full of instances where you can, you know, there was a play that someone put, one of the Pro Football Focus guys showed of TJ Watt just discarding Gronk in the running game, just throwing him down and making a tackle for a loss on Michelle. That cut up that CBS did during the game of Gronk's patterns.
Yes.
Didn't look awesome.
No.
But there were also some blocks where he was engaged and making plays, but that cut up didn't look great.
And that's what I'm wondering. Is it unique editing? No, I don't think it is. And even when people have said this, when he went back to the sideline, there was always a coach right there. At one point, I thought the coach was pointing to the bench, hey, get out of here. Mm-hmm. But he came right back in. It was a weird thing. So that's what the last question I have to you. Do you think that, A, I guess Gronk can do it, and B, that they'll find a way, Josh McDaniels will find a way to get him to do it? Because this is important.
I think he can do it. The bye is absolutely incredibly important to this team. That's why they can't afford to stub their toe against, obviously, this team this weekend, against the Jets. Because anything at less than 100% Gronk is not good enough in 2018. And that, to me, is the most disturbing thing, is he was so good last year, so physically adept last year. And even in the opener this year, he made some incredible plays.
Yes.
So it's not gone. That guy hasn't evaporated. Hasn't
so where did he go? What happened?
What happened?
That's great. What was it?
Best in Show?
Best
in
Show. Oh, wow, man. Mighty Wind.
That's a great show. What happened?
To me,
we're looking at a player who is injured and is kind of at loose ends as to what the team wants from him and whether or not he's going to get the ball. After that Kansas City game when Brady hit him twice on that final series, there was a video of him and Brady embracing and Brady saying, forever, man, forever. And the perception was that Brady was saying, we're going to do this forever. What it actually was Gronk saying to Brady, thank you for going to me. And Brady saying, of course I would. I'll go to you forever. But that's Gronk's unease at what his role is in this offense after they tried to trade him in the offseason. Mm-hmm. He is not as engaged as you would want him to be and hasn't been throughout this season. He's had a tough year in that regard. So that's why we're probably in the final days of Gronk as a Patriot.
Well, speaking of it, you were engaged for the entire time.
I made it through the four, yeah.
You did. It felt like two, right? Correct?
Felt like three.
Felt like three. That's fair. Analytics show it feels like three. All right, Tommy Curran has to go do his podcast. Thanks, Tom.
Hey, Peace happy New Year. Good stuff, Rob. You as well. Folks.
Yes, we have one more segment between Tomasi and before Tomasi and James. Be back right after this.
Now back to Dale and Keith on WEEI.
All right, Dale and Keith, Tom E. Kern, excellent job. Appreciate him coming in. He had to run to do the podcast. I look forward to that podcast. It's going to be a good one. Talking to a lot of different people about the MVPs. Speaking of MVPs, holy mackerel, Mark James is here.
Oh, that's a great segue.
Yeah. So
a great segue.
I told you out of the gate. And yep. I said, you heard me yesterday talk about it. I was wildly disappointed in
that's
you yesterday.
Okay. That's okay.
And because I sat there in my driveway for a full hour because Patrick Gilroy was coming in to battle with you.
Yep.
To battle with you. And you pivoted, you were dodging and weaving. I think we were just talking in the break, I think that this is where the disconnect. I've come to this conclusion, which is you felt uncomfortable because of Patrick's conditions. Correct. So
no, I think when a guy who basically was completely honest and transparent, he told me all the problems that he went through, and he said how, you know, it almost cost him his family, and they talked about how he has Crohn's disease, and he just was really honest and how he had to recover from that. When somebody's as honest, contrite, and transparent as Gilroy was, as Curtis was, as Dickerson is, what am I going to do? Just say you're a loser? Like, No.
I'm not saying you're a loser.
Yeah. Then you look like a bully. You look like a dick.
Well, but there was a as Mike pointed out, there was a Twitter exchange.
There was.
It was a Twitter exchange. Right. And if you don't want to talk about the particulars about the whole, hey, I feel weird talking about this Josh Gordon situation with you because you have these conditions. That's cool.
Yeah.
But we have this. This is, as Tomasi knows, once you put it in writing.
Yeah, right.
Once it's out there in print, and these tweets were out there in print, and you were saying.
Oh, it's in ink.
You were saying, hey, you know, you came back, and like you said, your friend told you whatever, and so you.
You know what else diffused the situation? What? He came in and brought me a box of lollipops.
Yeah, well, that's his move. That's his move. And Andy Hart took him. I mean, borrowed them a few hours later. But with the tweets, you basically came out and said, "I don't have it in front of me," but you said, "Hey, you know what? You work at night. You sell lollipops.
Yeah,
I don't value. Don't tell me how to do things. Am I wrong?"
He did.
And no, you did.
No. I did. No. Yes. Absolutely, I did. And that was.
Do you regret that?
No,
you don't regret that.
No,
tweet.
No. You know why? Okay. Because. I wish he would have done because, you know, Patrick is a guy who's on the station. He's on. There's two types of people in this world, Rob Bradford.
Yes.
The haves.
Yep.
The have-nots. The haves are on the air and writing for WEEI.com.
Yes.
The have-nots are the ones.
Joining this conversation. I totally agree with that. We are the haves.
We are the haves.
And within the haves, there is a select few who are like super haves. That's what WEEI.com
is. No, well, it's the number one. Listen, I don't work for WEEI.com, even though we're on the same umbrella, but it is the number one sports website in the world.
I want to stay with the haves and haves.
So the haves and the haves not. The have-nots are the trolls and unemployed losers bitching, moaning, and complaining about the haves who are on the air and on WEEI.com.
But you were classifying Gilroy as a have-not, even though he's on the air.
Well, here's the thing. And this is the one thing I will say, and we didn't get in this yesterday because we were mostly talking about the Josh Gordon stuff.
I know, I missed it.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I'll put my credentials down on the table versus anybody, including Patrick Gilroy.
That's not the point. You can have the greatest credentials. Okay. You could be the best credentialed talk show host in the world, but the problem is that you just said it yourself. They have and the have-nots.
Right.
The have-nots are the guys who are trolling on Twitter or whatever. Then you have the haves, and you said the people who are working in this building. Patrick Gilroy works in this building.
And he's been here longer than me.
Right, but you were saying yes or no. You were saying that he was a have-not by saying that off the tweet, saying, oh, you work at night, you sell lollipops.
Well, and that's right. And you, if you notice the
tweet. And that's why he was in here, by the way, at 9 o'clock yesterday morning.
And if you notice the tweet, it was literally about, let's say, 5 minutes after 4 o'clock, which is three.
Hold on. You start drinking?
I don't drink. Which is 3 hours and 30 minutes after my partner pulled the John Dennis and walked out on me.
Yes.
So you can understand. I was
your emotions were
running a little hot.
But I just said, do you want to take back that tweet?
No.
And you said no.
No, because I said what I meant at the time and meant what I said. No, I don't want to take it back. No way.
But I don't. John. What are you reading?
I'm sorry. I'm reading about the North Carolina election.
I thought you were reading the Steve Buckley feature on Kirk Minahan.
Oh, I already read. That was the first thing I read this morning.
By the way,
he did a great job on that.
Yeah, he did. Chris Shine, let's get a copy of that. You got the cop. Thank
already
you.
Taken care of.
Very good. Very good.
So anyway, we aren't going to get anywhere, but I just wanted
and
I
by,
wanted
and
to
And by the
it,
way, can I just tell yes. you, Sue? Gilroy and I, we're straight now. We're cool.
That's usually what happens.
We're cool, and he's coming in tonight from 6 to 8 p.m. I said, listen, come on over. If Tomasi, I'm sure John doesn't mind. 5:50-ish, whatever, final
John,
segment.
John, you mind if he comes in at 4?
No, he can come in right now if he wants. You guys can hash this out. I'll. You know what? I will even be man enough to step aside.
There you go.
What a guy.
How magnanimous. But I said, come on over for the cross, over, and let's...
That's good. So I will sit in my driveway.
Gilroy's a class act, dude.
Oh, I know that.
He's a class act.
I know that. Yeah. I like you both. I like the fact that when I was sitting in my driveway, I was looking forward to something that never came.
And you know who else is a class act who's ripping me on Twitter for no reason? I don't know why. Blind Mike. I like Blind Mike. I have nothing against him.
I'll get you together with him.
He's a good dude.
He's a great guy. What are you guys going to talk about?
We're going to talk about, Tomasi and I are going to get into, is it Brady or is it the weapons or lack thereof around Tom Brady?
I got in a fight with Curran.
He told me that on the way out. He was like,
is that
yeah,
why
we
you
got
made him
fight.
Walk off?
No. if that was the case, it would have been a short show. It was like 10:15. But it was
right out of the gate.
It was right out of the gate. It was good. It was good.
I didn't see...
Organically.
What, Heyman, wasn't it good? That was a good fight.
Yeah, it was pretty good, right?
I don't have a problem with somebody who talks too much. That's why I couldn't side with you. He did not like
when he said, get your point out, and when I said, pot kettle black, I don't think he liked that. Yeah. Anyway, it was good. This show is going
to
be excellent. Good to see both of
good
you.
Good to see you too, Brad.
Happy holidays.
By the way, if I don't see you, happy new year.
I will see you tomorrow. Oh, no, I won't see
no.
you.
No.
All right. Oh, yeah, happy new year.
Happy new year to
yes,
you, man.
Yes, you
happy new
well.
Year. I'll
you,
see you next year.
Oh, yes. It's gonna be a great 2009 for
Boom
us.
Boom sauce.
All. Boom sauce. I gotta go. I'm Rob Bradford.
Get
out
of here.
Tommy Curran, Eamon, great job. We'll see y'all down the line. Well, let me ask you this, because
you answer that before you go do the let me ask you. Listen, you're spoken.
Let me finish.
You've been going for 90 seconds.
You just went on this diatribe for 15 minutes. Let me talk for a second.
Holy
okay,
crap.
We're close to common ground. Remember the Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi
yeah.
Leonard.
There's Kawhi Leonard.
It's time to go. It is time to move on.
Goodbye. Thank you for stopping by. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.